Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Tonight, I'd like to tell you how I came across this Zen practice. That is my origin story. So, the story begins when I was in my early teens. I grew up in Greece, and I remember one night I was staring out of the window of a car and I was daydreaming. And at that point I had a sudden realization that I was conscious. Now don't get me wrong, prior to this I wasn't unconscious. But I never before had a sense of being a witness to this stream of consciousness in my mind. And at that moment, I think it was the first time I realized that I was thinking about thinking. I was observing myself thinking. And this was very awe-inspiring, and it was completely mysterious. So from that point on, it feels that I've been on a quest to understand this mystery. I suppose another way to put this is that I started trying to find the answer to the question, who am I, really? And when we ask this question, the usual answers that come up are, well, this is my name, I was born over here, this is what I do for work, and so on. But these answers seem a little incidental, and they don't feel as if they get to the essence of this mystery. So my first attempt to answer this question was to turn to the ones who were considered to be the wisest in these kind of questions. And since the culture I grew up with was the land of Socrates and Aristotle, I turned to the philosophers. So I started reading about philosophy, and I even went as far as choosing to study philosophy at university. I enrolled at the London School of Economics. But after several years of study, I didn't feel I got a very good answer to this question. My school specialized in Western analytical philosophy. And this seems to have been more concerned with parsing statements and playing word games about what this word means and that word means. And it felt like my professors were trying to catch each other in logical inconsistencies that were not really relevant to real life experience. I had a Greek friend, his name was Emilios, and I used to have long conversations with him in his garden about the meaning of life, what is consciousness, religion, and so on. He was one of the calmest and kindest people I had ever come across. And little known fact, he had hosted the Dalai Lama in his house on the Dalai Lama's one and only visit to Greece during the 70s. In preparing this talk, I actually went to the Dalai Lama's website to check. And surprisingly, there's a whole list of everywhere where he's been since he left Tibet in 1959, and Greece only appeared once on that list. So this is fact-checked. Anyway, as you might have guessed, my friend Emilius was also a practicing Buddhist. He meditated daily. And his recommendation in helping me try to answer that question was I read this book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Suzuki Roshi. At around that same time, in 1998, that's when I first moved to the U.S. To join my future wife who was studying at Stanford. And we lived in a condo in Mountain View. And so during my first few weeks here in California, I started reading this book. And as I was reading, I came across these words in the introduction. This book was conceived by Marion Derby, organizer of the Los Altos Zen Group. So the words Los Altos sounded familiar. And I searched on MapQuest, because Google Maps hadn't been born yet. And I saw that Los Altos was actually very close to Mountain View. Even more exciting, I discovered that there was a Zen center two blocks away from where we lived. And this was the old Canondo, the Zendo that was on University Avenue and right just off Rengsdorf. I know some of you remember this. So I started going there. At first I started going to the noon sittings because the 5:30 in the morning sittings were too scary. And I also started attending the Wednesday evening talks, which even back then were given by Les. He's been around a long time. And during his talks, he said things like, practicing awareness of our breath enables us to find ourselves and express ourselves. So those kind of statements started to sound like the start of an answer to this question. I also find other answers by reading Suzuki Roshi's book. For example, when you are you, you see things as they are, and you become one with your surroundings. And also another example, our way is not to sit to acquire something. It is to express our true nature. To be honest with you, when I first came across these type of statements, they sounded a little bit like hocus pocus to me. But it felt good to sit. And so I kept coming to the Zendo, I kept attending talks and sesshins, and I also read more books about Zen and Buddhism. And after a while, slowly, slowly, these cryptic statements started to make more sense. But I think it was more of an intellectual understanding at first. If I can give you an example, there's a lot of self-help books. And so you might see in a self-help book, you know, believe in yourself or face your fears. This kind of advice makes perfect sense when you hear it, when you read it. And it seems obvious, yes, of course I should believe myself. But how do you do that? Can you just decide and, okay, I'll believe myself from now on. Done deal. I don't think that's so easy to do. Also, so going back to those statements that I referred to earlier, how do you find yourself in your breath? How can you see things as they are? How can you express your true nature, especially by just sitting staring at a wall? It doesn't seem to be something you can just decide and voila, your true nature is expressed. So it took some time for the real meaning of these statements to sink in. The answer to my original question, who am I really? didn't come in a single aha moment, but it gradually emerged over years of constant practice. At one point, I realized that the answer to that question couldn't be found in words. And in fact, if you started using words to answer it, you're probably on the wrong track already. I think the answer lies more in the experience of being aware of the present moment. And so, in a way, it's a question that continuously answers itself when we bring our attention to the present moment. And so it's always the same answer, but it's also always a different answer. See, I've learned how to speak Zen too now. I think I can say that I'm satisfied with this answer that took so long to find. And so now I'm ready to try to answer the next question, which is, how can I help all beings be happy? Thank you. If you have any questions?
Thank you for your lovely talk, Philippe. How's it going on that second question?
Well, so the first question took about maybe 20-odd years to start to really get answered in a satisfactory way. And I think the first question is a real help in answering the second question, because I think to know how to help, you have to know who you are. And so that's a good start. And I think it's a little bit the same kind of process, for me at least. You have to follow your nose, you have to try this, you have to try that, you have to see what opportunities arise, you have to evaluate your own strengths and weaknesses and put on your best effort. So let's see what happens.
I have a question related to that. So,
wait, are you allowed to ask a question? I thought you were just passing the microphone. Okay.
So, if you haven't found an answer for how to make all beings be happy, do you have an answer for how not to make beings suffer?
So this is something quite topical, because I've been discussing the principle of ahimsa with some friends, and ahimsa being the principle of not harming. Maybe it's one of the foundations of Buddhism too. And I think that just by the mere fact of existing, you cannot help but harm just by existing. There's no way you can't be harming. You never know how you're going to harm and who you're going to harm in what way. And so the more maybe aware you are of your circumstance and situation, the more skillful you can be in reducing the harm you make around you. But it's a constant effort, and it's never possible not to harm anything. Is that too abstract? Hillary.
Hi, Philippe. I have two questions. One is, can you just define what you mean by happiness? You want all beings to be happy, so what does that really mean? And the second question is, do you think that should be the priority, to be happy versus like fulfilled or challenged, or like, why do you think being happy is like the next best thing that you need to focus on?
All the easy questions tonight. Thank you. So I think happiness is the other side of the coin of happiness is reducing suffering, right? So reducing suffering seems to be the same thing as increasing happiness in a way. So, you know, what is it to be happy? Well, one way to answer that, I guess, is to say, well, that's to suffer less. Just what was the other part of it? For to suffer less? Yes. So I think when there is suffering, the more suffering there is, the more the world shrinks, and the more you can only see your own situation because of the suffering. And so it seems to me that it's necessary to reduce the suffering, to be able to think about fulfillment, think about these other higher aspirations. I mean, if you're suffering, there's just no room to even start on these other things. So we've got to start there. And once there's enough space, then you could move on. Who am I really?
Who am I really?
Yes. You.
Oh. First you.
First you, Shen.
So you said that when you come back to that first question, who am I really? And you said it's not, if you try to put it in words, it's you're going to fail. You've come to see it as, I don't know how you expressed it, but something about your experience in the moment and your presence. Can you say a bit more about what that means and how does that embody who you are? Like,
yeah. So when you answer the question, the question, who am I really, and I try to expand a little bit on that in the talk, is more to do with what is this thing I am? I'm conscious. I have these experiences. I feel this, I feel that. But what is this mystery of being conscious, right? And so obviously when you start try to answer that question with, you know, I'm my name is so-and-so, it's so that doesn't go to answer this question. There's also scientific answers to who are we? Well, you know, we're these Homo sapiens. We have so many neurons in our brain. But those are good explanations about how we got here, but I don't think they answer that question either. Like, what is this mystery? And so another maybe version of that question, who am I really, could be, you know, what is the meaning of life? What am I? What am I supposed to do? What is life all about? You know, that may be another flavor of that question. And so, similarly, it feels to me just as trying to answer the question with facts, as in the scientific answer or the other normal answers, that misses the point. I don't think you can write it down and say, well, this is what it is. It's more a lived-in feeling. That's more close to the answer, I think. Yes. Oh, you. Yes.
Do your Zen practice and yoga practice complement each other? Was that a kind of accidental type of journey, or was it sort of how did it all come about? And I would love to hear you.
So I was going to say that for another talk. Some of you may not know, but I also practice yoga daily, so I do yoga a lot, and there's often this description of there are different paths to the mountaintop, and so I think that's a way to describe it. It's a different path, the different tools.
Talking about, I think, to help other people, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, in the sutra we cited it. So one line that I keep running by, which is, with anger or hatred, wishing harm to another person. So this is what we're not supposed to do. When this is directed at you, with anger. Hatred, wishing harm to you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help? I'll take my answer.
I think there's a big difference between being the recipient of anger and harm, wish, like intentional harm being directed to you, and being the initiator of that feeling, right? So there's a difference between when harm is directed at you and when you're starting to want to be harming other people. And the difference is, in one case, you have control over what's happening internally in a way, and in the other, it's just you're in a situation, it's a circumstance. It's an environment you have to deal with, which is similar to any kind of, I think, high stress environment. Whether it be illness or an extreme cold or harm being directed at you. All these are just an environmental circumstance that creates high stress. And so I think it's just a matter of it depends on the context, how, used to the circumstances you are and practiced with the circumstances and how you deal with it. If it's something you've never seen before, it's very difficult to know how to react. But if you have encountered this over time, you become more and more skillful in dealing with it. I think it's just a matter of learning.
Thank you, Philippe. I think what hasn't been said in this question of who am I, and that in my experience comes through meditation, is the sense of I am really no different from everyone and everything else. I'm connected to everyone and everything else. And even when you're breathing in and breathing out, just knowing that the whole world is breathing in and out kind of links you in this activity to everyone and everything. So this idea of suffusing love over the entire world, it's basically loving who you are part of. You know, you are part of that world. And to be angry or to direct anger or harm towards any being in the world is directing anger at what you are part of. So I would kind of like to, you know, add that for some of those questions that, you know, are saying, well, why should you help others and so forth? What's
the point in that? That's also another talk, right?
Just my two
think
cents.
It's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you for your talk tonight. It was wonderful. In particular, the scene with Emilio's in the garden, beautiful.
Thank you.
And I think that, like, that kind of childhood moment has a kind of a eternal quality to it that, you know, you can feel in this room probably 30 years later. And that, you know, love of learning and that excitement of the new. I recently started a yoga class at work.
Okay.
They brought in a yoga instructor. I've really gotten into it, and I have injuries I didn't even know I had. They moved it to Friday at 5 p.m. this week. So I really have to want to do it, because otherwise a lot of people are going home. My question is, do you remember the Bridge to Nowhere? Maybe 10, 20 years ago, there was like this political
in Alaska.
Chess piece. Yeah, in Alaska. Yes. I kind of had that moment with philosophy at some point. Like, I can't, there's no, it's not going to, you know?
A familiar feeling.
But, no, my question is, has it been with yoga a continuous broadening, deepening? Has it always felt like, okay, this is something that's going to help me with your question that you answered tonight so eloquently?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, yoga is very similar to Zen or meditation. I mean, yoga is a form of meditation, and the Buddha was a yogi. Let's not kid ourselves. And it's an experiential practice, right? I think that is one of the most important things about Zen practice. It's experiential. You just do it. Same with yoga. You just do it. And the more you do it, I think, the more you uncover the depth. And it has that quality.
Felipe, thanks for sharing your journey. That was really very interesting. So my question was, after you answered your first question,
mm-hmm.
why is your second question to have all beings be happy? Like, it could be some other question.
Right? Yes.
There are not many choices at that point, but
yes.
There are a few. But can you talk about why this was your second question?
So I sometimes wonder why I had my first question in the first place. I mean, that's kind of an odd question to have usually. So I'm not so sure about that. But I think once I became comfortable with who am I, it was an experience that sort of freed me up, because we can spend a lot of time trying to find out, okay, where do I belong? You know, what am I? Am I this kind of gender? Am I this kind of nationality? Am I this kind of person? All this can take a lot of effort and time, and we can just spend time trying to answer that. And so not having to deal with these things anymore, I mean, I don't feel I have so much. I think, again, it broadens the view, so that now I have enough, there seems to be enough space and time to look around and say, okay, how can I help? It seems to me the next question. I don't know what other questions I would ask. Do you have any other question that comes to you? Think about emptiness? You mean, is the question, what is emptiness? That's part of who am I? That's the first question. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I have a couple thoughts. First of all, the doctors take an oath, Hippocratic oath, to do no harm. And that's like their primary thing.
Yeah.
And that's a good, that's a noble oath, you know. And I try to adopt that in my life, in my work, as best I can. As far as, like, who am I? That question contains the word I.
Yes.
So it, like, asserts an I.
Yes.
That may not be there.
Yes.
So maybe the way I think about it is, like, who are we? Or what are we? Or what is this? What's going on?
Like, yes.
What does it mean? I watch animals. I have a cat, and she just sits quietly and watches. And animals have an awareness, they have a consciousness, but we have that, but we have like a meta-consciousness. We're aware that we're aware.
Yes.
Which is, can be kind of a curse.
Yes.
Like it creates a trap. Then we start worrying about if we're wearing the right clothes or something.
Right.
And the culture we live in, Even if we aspire to let go of our ego, there's enough people with egos that it creates this culture that has, you know, so it's easy to get caught up in that. For me, it shows up in my mind when I'm driving, sometimes I feel very uncomfortable driving, like, this guy cut me off, like, real petty, like, he didn't stop at the stop sign, you know, like, I find myself being very judgmental, and recently, I noticed that's because of, I have my own defensiveness. Like, I'm on guard. So I'm starting to let go of that. And we're all just trying to get along through traffic. And I merge and they merge and we, you know. Anyway, that's how I monitor my own self, by how I'm driving. Maybe, and if you want to comment on any of
I think we're back to his question about things being directed at us in a way, right? Being in an environment that is stress-inducing, right? I mean, whether it's an anger being directed at you, or is there's an event that happens in front of you and it's interpreted in that, oh, this person is trying to do X to me, right? I mean, when somebody cuts you off, that's probably the thinking. It just feels that it's practice. It's just practice. It's the same practice as when we sit in front of the wall and the mind starts to wander. And what happens? Well, sometimes we notice it wander and we bring the mind back to the breath. So whenever something happens in the cars, sometimes you notice what happens, bring the mind back to the breath. The more you do that, the better you'll get to at it. I mean, I don't know.
Thank you for your talk, Philippe. First of all, I want to say your first question is not unusual at all.
Oh, okay.
I think me and I assume a lot of people have that question.
Maybe in this room.
I think deep down, we, or at least I always like hope we come to this world with a special mission, with a, you know, high destiny.
Purpose,
yeah. I think that's not unusual at all. So I want to share something I read before from I forgot the name, a philosopher. It make a lot of sense to me. Still, I mean, when I read that, I make a lot of sense, and still today, it make a lot of sense. So he said, life in the beginning is just like a piece of blank paper. It really depends on how everybody draws on it. Right? So some people make good planning, make a beautiful picture, and some people are just draw randomly, make a mess. Well, we all end. But we all present, depend on what we do, what we experience, and how we grow, then we all draw a different picture mm-hmm. for our own life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one way to look at life. I just want to share that. Also, I thank you. Also, I do have a question. I'm new to Zen, but I did read plenty of Buddhism book before, so I think I understand Buddhism pretty well. What's the difference between Zen and Buddhism?
Aha. I don't think I'm qualified to answer that question. And that would be for another talk, maybe not given by me. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.